Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how's it going, man?
51, dude. We're almost there. The final countdown. I wish I had a button that I could play that final countdown.
Final countdown.
That's exactly what it sounds like. So I don't need the button. So thank you. But
yeah,
here we're back, dude. Episode 51 and 52 of our How to Start a Tech series, or How to Start a Tech Company, and how to realistically understand how tech companies work, as we are admittedly going to be exactly 2 weeks late delivering this, or 2 months late. Now, we have taught so many. Well, I know, but we've taught so many people along the way that your expectations should be that things take twice as long and cost 2 to 3 times as much. Being the eternal optimist that I am, Matt, I actually believe we are 10 months ahead of schedule and way under budget. Which has led to this series being acquired. And we're going to talk about what happens after an acquisition today. Now, Matt, I know you know so much about this. I'm going to let you rest your mind and your voice for just a moment while I remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Gusto. Gusto has modern solutions for modern HR problems, whether it's talent management, payroll, or onboarding tools. Gusto's HR platform has it all for you. Be smarter than your competitors and try free 3-month subscription. You just go to gusto.com/startup hustle. Once again, gusto.com/startup hustle. So Matt, you know what's even easier than typing all that stuff in? Just go down to the show notes and click the link.
Click.
It'll take you right there. So, you know, Matt, we here in our approach pattern to this, we've, you know, recently talked about preparing for an exit. Well, what is an acquisition? Preparing for an exit. Reasons acquisitions fall apart, negotiating a successful exit, and then you have the good old what happens after. Now, oh man, in no less than 10 episodes in the history of what is, by the way, episode 800 is March 7th.
I can't believe crazy. That.
I know. I was talking to Sandy Kemper recently, and I was reminded, he was like, what shows was I on? I was like, well, you were on episode number 100, where we were super pumped to have gotten to 100 episodes and to have you as our guest. You were like our big golden prize. Do you remember that? We were like, yeah, yes. It's a perfect guest. Yeah, now he's been on 3 times, and he's like, yeah, am I still one of your most popular episodes? I don't know. A quick count, bro. Yeah.
Yes.
Love the episodes with Sandy, which, by the way, you talk about acquisitions and raising capital, you know, up to 400 and well over 400 million. But our episode is titled 400 million in capital and what we did with it. So,
yeah, I that's mean, interesting. C2FO is definitely one of the unicorns of Kansas City. So,
I mean,
they've got to be a billion-dollar company, and they're just
and a guest that, is amazing with the info, the expertise. And honestly, I look at and I think, I'm like, wow, I've got so much room to grow.
Yeah,
I've got a lot to learn still. So now, I don't know if an acquisition's in their future, but you've had a couple, Matt. So, you know, when it comes to acquisitions, I mean, in general, acquisition describes a primarily amicable transaction, depends who you ask, where both firms cooperate, also depends who you ask. Friendly acquisitions occur when the target firm agrees to be acquired, its board of directors or whomever approves the acquisition. And friendly acquisitions often work towards the mutual benefit of acquiring and, you know, target companies. Now, you know, there we've talked about a lot of the other stuff, mainly that, you know, for individual managers, employees, that, you know, an acquisition can be personally disruptive, maybe even feel traumatic, as if the baby is being ripped out of your arms or a whole lot of stuff. But, you know, really in the end, like for this episode, we're moving past all that stuff. And, you know, the real question is what happens afterward? Now, Matt, you've talked about this in the past and kind of described, well, you know what, let's just go firsthand, Matt. After the Vend Solutions acquisition, which was in the $150 million ballpark in 2011, like, I mean, what happened after that?
Well, with any acquisition, right, it's going to impact multiple different things and people, right? So it's me personally, it's the other shareholders, it's our employees, it's our executives, it's our product, it's our customers, like everybody gets affected in some different way, right? And depending on the type of acquisition, it's good or bad or no change for all these different things. You know, the number one thing I can think of was a bunch of consultants crawling up my ass. That was the first thing I could think of. You sell a company, and the next thing you know, like the mothership wants to come crawl up your ass about all sorts of shit. You know, like the consultants come in and want to make sure security is good and this is good and that is good, and you're like, oh fuck.
Shouldn't they have done that before?
Well, they do, but it just gets worse afterwards, you know.
Well, Matt, you described this to me in the past, and maybe even when we were discussing, you know, when you were in Million Dollar Bedroom. I mean, you described the feeling as being really anticlimactic, all of the glitz, glamour, hustle, stress, everything happened before, and then you wake up and there's a bunch of money in your bank account, and you're kind of like, huh?
I would say, you know, if you think about the roller coaster ride, probably the climax is when you get the offer and you get the letter of intent. That is probably actually the biggest highlight of all of it, because then you've got to grind for like 3 to 6 months. That is pure hell of getting the deal done, the due diligence, all the meetings, all the bullshit you got to do. It's exhausting. I mean, now if you're just a shareholder that didn't have to do any of the work, then okay, sure. Then you're just super excited when you get the money later. But if you're an executive or the founder that is going through all the bullshit to get the deal done, once you get the money, it's just like a huge sigh of relief. You're just off the roller coaster at that point. You're like, oh my God, the last 3 months, 6 months have been exhausting. I just want to go like sit on an island somewhere and do nothing now. Like, it's just exhausting. And you just kind of get off the roller coaster. And really the most exciting part of it was back when you got the offer, I would say. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and I think that's why I was like the glitz, the glamour. Like, I mean, we kind of get to the point where the money's about to be transferred. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of the writing's on the wall at that point. Now, you know, Matt's speaking from the founder, owner, or investor, like the shareholder perspective. But after an acquisition, the reality is a lot different for the people that work at the company. Now, in many cases, and we've talked about this, and this was the case for you, both with Vend Solutions and Netreo, most of the time leaders or CEOs, CTOs, you know, a lot of times are involved in what is known as an earnout, or they are around for an indefinite amount of time. Now, another, you know, so at we were talking about the past, episode 150, we had Neil Sharma on, who is the founder and CEO of DEG, which was another $150 million acquisition for a company here in Kansas City. So that was ironically on episode 150, but I was talking to you guys about that Now, Neil actually, years later, has now stepped away from DEG. So in some cases, like Neil's, like, he stayed a long time. You know, I mean, that was years. I mean, it's 2.5 years, basically. And, you know, if I read his article about that, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I think Neil's a great leader, and maybe just bailing in the middle of a pandemic wasn't the right thing to do. But, you know, as far as leadership goes, that's variable. Now, for employees, this is a lot different. And I shared some of my experience. My greatest experience of a post-acquisition world of working for a company was not a company that I owned. It was when a private equity firm purchased 6 different musical instrument chains, and this is in my late 20s, and they mushed them all into one. Now, that created chaos, man. There was a lot. I mean, people were walking around on eggshells. There was a lot of people just literally had already packed up their shit because they knew they were going to not end up with a job. Yeah. Because yep. A lot of these acquisitions and mergers occur because it's cheaper to mush 3 things together, and because you only need one of this, not 3. And so these things, this redundancy, and, you know, you're trying to, you know, so you're running the board. It's like the in Office Space when the consultants come by. I mean, there's a lot of people. So exactly what do you do here, Matt? You know, it's just maybe interviewing for your own job again.
Well, for sure, there's, depending on the type of acquisition and the size of the companies and all that stuff, right? There's definitely massive culture changes that happen and how it impacts the day-to-day job of different employees, right? At the Vend Solutions side, when we were acquired, I would say it didn't really impact the day-to-day of the employees. We kind of ran as an independent business unit and just kept doing what we were doing. They honestly never really integrated the companies very well together. Really what they did, I would say almost years later, is just shut down certain product lines, actually. Like this whole like team, they just shut down because they move the customers to a different business unit's product. Like, and so that happened over a much longer period of time. And then, you know, you gave the example of the music instrument store, music instrument stuff. And then, you know, from the Netreo side, when Netreo acquired StackFi, they pretty much immediately merged a lot of the teams together. So, I mean, it was like an instant kind of like, hey, you do, you're an account manager, but now you're an account manager for both products. So now you got to learn both products. You got to understand both customer bases. You got to understand all sorts of new shit. Congratulations. You have like 2 jobs now instead of 1. Right. Like, and then you also just get into the just giant culture shock, right, around how companies do business, where it's like, you know, most startups are young, they're agile, they're more nimble, they make quick decisions, right? And the entrepreneurs and the leaders are usually much quicker to make decisions, right? Like almost to their own fault. They run around with a shotgun and they just make decisions all day, and sometimes there's collateral damage. Where all of a sudden you got acquired, and now if you got acquired by a much bigger company, things may move dramatically slower, right? Where it's like, feels like nothing ever gets accomplished. And that is a giant culture change that some of us simply cannot survive in. Some yeah, employees just cannot.
I'd struggle with that. And I think I don't think that's your favorite scenario either. No. Because like you look at our perspective, I mean, I'm used to owning or being one of the owners of the company, which means I don't have to go through 9 levels of approval. And
you're used to running around with a shotgun.
Yeah. Or shooting somebody myself takes in the your foot shotgun. You're shooting myself in the foot with it on some days, yeah. Which I take responsibility for, but I might have to actually get permission at the new company to shoot myself in the foot.
So Matt, your new job is to now make PowerPoint presentations about what your team is going to do. And we're going to have meetings and discuss those. And we're going to need to see all sorts of spreadsheets and numbers and goals and forecasts. And if you could get all that done by Friday, that would be great.
I'm busy working on new cover pages for TPS reports, so I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do that. And I'm also got my 4th meeting about whether we should be using Microsoft Teams or Slack.
Oh my God, yes. And I mean, and this is a reality that happens when any kind of companies merge, right? You've got, we have different tools and we have these management meetings. This is how we do things. You know, we have quarterly meetings. We have monthly meetings. You know, we have, it's like today, like you might be in charge of whatever product or engineering, right? And then all of a sudden you merge, like, oh, now the VP of product is going to take that over. And this is how they do things. And everything has to go through a review committee. And now we have to worry more about security and SOC compliance and all this shit. And you're like, fuck, I just want to get this little change done in the software. And now they're like, no, that has to go through a committee. And we have to talk to customers and get their opinions first. And they go, oh my God, you just want to jump off a bridge.
So if the acquisition's big enough, I may request specific time throughout the day to stop and take breaks to shop for private islands.
Yes, that's important too.
Is that frowned upon? Or do you just get someone to do that for you and just bring you the results? I feel like part of the fun is actually shopping for the island and really like, but maybe not.
Well, you'll be in so many meetings all day. That it's pretty easy to just do that during the meeting.
Yeah. It's really starting to come together.
Yeah.
It's
really, while you're ignoring it, you can fight with your, you know, wife or spouse or whatever about the paint that she wants to do and the giant remodel and, you know, all the things, you know? Yeah.
Totally. Or, you know, that and shopping for overpriced JPEGs. I mean, NFTs.
Yes.
Because yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to have a Bored Ape. I mean, and some other things.
Yeah, you should definitely invest all of your money in JPEGs. Yes. I can't wait to start our series about NFTs. Yeah,
we're gonna be doing a series on that, and trust me, that will not be the last time that Matt or I sound a little surprised that we chose the wrong career. Who would have known 10 years ago all we needed to be doing is buying and selling JPEGs?
You know, they used to call them starving artists. I don't know if they're starving anymore.
They will be once reality sets in and 98% of those things would turn back into a JPEG.
So going back to, you know, the acquisition and how it impacts everybody, you know, for a lot of employees, it absolutely creates a lot of uncertainty, right? They're, you know, our executive assistant, you know, immediately is like, I just don't know. Like, they already had an executive assistant. So now there's two of them. And I just don't really feel like there's enough work for both of us or whatever. And so she quits, right? Like, you end up with a lot of people that jump off the ship because they're just not sure about what the post-acquisition world looks like, or they don't like their new manager, or maybe they were happy working with you before, but maybe they weren't like extremely happy. But now all of a sudden they're like, I got a new boss, new company. You know, maybe I should look around. Maybe I should think about, you know, what other options are out there. And my friend Joe keeps trying to recruit me to come work with him. So, you know, maybe I should actually think about it. You know, and next thing you know, you got a floodgate of people leaving. Like, it's just part of the deal.
Yeah, and I think that's expected. So, you know, a couple other things that, you know, from a more mechanical standpoint, you know, after a merger occurs or an acquisition occurs, I mean, there is an actual, like, you know, shares. Like, there's legal stuff that occurs. Like, if you owned companies in share A, and somehow those could turn into now new shares in company B. Meaning, like, you know, it's the first thing is no longer a thing, and it's now something else. You know, another thing too is in a lot of startups, and this has been, you know, part of what, you know, as tech really, you know, rose and and valuations went through the roof. I mean, there was a ton of people in San Francisco that, you know, it found themselves young and rich. Mm-hmm. And you know, here's the thing is, you could in many cases have a bunch of newly semi wealthy people around, and well, everyone handles that differently. Let me just put it that way.
I mean, they handle it way better than the people who won the lottery that might have been like really, really dumb that just got handed a bunch of money. I mean, usually it's smart money, right? You got people that were entrepreneurs that ran a business or whatever, and they're usually more educated, smarter, or whatever. And so, yeah, if they get handed a few million dollars, they're going to be much better than the lottery winners are, probably. Because you hear some crazy stories about the lottery winners. Most of them all end up broke later. But, you know, even entrepreneurs, they in some sense, when you have a big win, it makes you feel invincible, too. And they feel like everything they're gonna touch later turns to gold, and they can repeat the success and all that, which is absolutely not true. some people get lucky and they have multiple wins. You know, you got somebody like Elon Musk that maybe everything he touches turns to gold. Or maybe you could say the same thing about somebody like Donald Trump. Or you get some people that are just big personalities. Like somebody like Trump, I don't know if he's just successful because he's Trump. Like maybe he's not successful at all, but people just like, because he is who he is, they like treat him however they treat him, right? But for the average Joe, like the rest of us, like we're successful once does not necessarily mean we're going to be successful again.
Well, I agree on the high level examples. Now, one thing that I would rebut with is I do think that once you've seen what winning looks like, it makes it easier to win.
Sure.
And one thing I do know for a fact is once you have won, your street cred has gone up a lot. So it is like you use like the Trump example, and I don't ever like talking about Trump because honestly, I don't like talking about politics, but regardless, there are names, brands, and street cred. And we've talked about this even up to fundraising, like having the right advisors and people and stuff around you. Like you have brand value. Like, dude, you and I have that. Like realistically we do. And you know, now what's that worth? Is it Trump or whatever? I mean, maybe not, but, or definitely not Elon Musk, but on the micro Mac, like smaller scales, it does definitely matter. You know, another thing too is even regardless of what it is, even us being on, okay, so when I was on the Forbes Next 1000 last year, I got all kinds of weird shit coming my way after that. Mainly nothing that I wanted to even pay attention to, but it definitely draws people out of the woodwork. I still get weekly calls, emails, or inquiries from people that found Full Scale on the list of Kansas City's fastest growing companies. And that becomes tough to manage. Now, speaking of management, managing your team can be as easy as 1, 2, 3 with Gusto. No more late nights for processing payroll or dealing with business tax filings. No more painful spreadsheets for attendance tracking. Say hello to your new smart HR platform. You can go to gusto.com/startup hustle. You get a 3-month free subscription. Matt, it's gusto.com/startup hustle. Now, I don't know if Gusto handles business tax filings for post-acquisition mega checks, but yeah, I mean, like what I was saying right before that is your life does change the perception that people have. And you and I have talked about that a little bit. I mean, I think people probably treated you a little differently afterward.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how people treat you, yes. And there's a lot of pros and cons with it, right? I mean, you know, it really changes your life in a lot of ways forever. And even with your family, it creates all sorts of weird problems with your family as well. It definitely changes a lot of things, and it's hard to even explain. You know, but the easiest example is like, hey, your best friend that you might would go have dinner with, his version of dinner might be meeting at Taco Bell, right? Where your version of dinner now might be very, very different, and you wouldn't be caught dead at Taco Bell, right? Because you're like, I have money and I'm not going to Taco Bell. But to them,
I'd still go to Taco Bell. I like Taco Bell.
I would go to Taco Bueno, but not Taco Bell. But
I'd go there too. Maybe both. Maybe I'd go to both and then decide which one I wanted to eat. And that would be my version of fancy.
But what makes it even worse is you also know that even if you go meet your friend at Taco Bell, you're buying. There is no way they're even going to pay for Taco Bell, right? And it just creates weird problems and relationships that happen because of that, right? And you almost, in a lot of ways, have to find a new circle of friends that you have more in common with, that you can do different things with. And it just makes things difficult.
You said that to me with one of the very first things. So for those of you listening, Matt and I first got, we had maybe only met one time before I asked to have a conversation with him to put in $1 million bedroom. And we realized we had some commonalities after that. We have kids that are the same age. We live really close to each other. We didn't really know each other, but we hung out a couple times after that, and you actually made a comment to me. You said, man, I like the fact that you don't want anything from me. Just meaning like that's the tiresome part. Like, I mean, I run into that a lot too. Just people wanting, I don't know, they want money from you. Basically, they want you to invest, validate, advise, direct, I don't know, just the, it goes on. And the thing is I like doing a lot of that stuff. The problem is 90% of the people aren't really coming proper with that. It's like, I'd love to buy you a cup of coffee so I can pick your brain about starting a .com. And they're emailing you from their Yahoo email. Do not email me about your tech company from your Yahoo email. Seriously, don't. Just don't.
Well, and that's the hardest part.
Don't email anybody about your tech company from Yahoo.
Well, and that is a hard part. You get a lot of people that will hit you up for investments. Yeah. And honestly, as we all know, like 80 to 90% of startups fail. So the best thing you can do is say no to most of them. Unless it's something that I always say, and this is for me, like I don't usually invest in things unless it's something I'm really passionate about or really understand or really care about.
Been in that boat a lot too. I've actually been in the room where you or I have said that, like, hey, this is a cool idea. I'm sure you would be successful, but I don't know anything about this. So it's hard for me to want to write a check. It's hard for me to give you advice. And that kind of makes me dumb money. And I don't like being dumb.
Yeah.
At all. Okay. So one of the things that occurs after an acquisition is there's usually some level or form or person or group or someone that's an integration leader. And, you know, this is someone that's designed, this is a change agent. This is all the, you know, so change management. So you look at our company, Full Scale, we're coming up on our 250th employee. We should be there in about a month and a half. And
that's crazy.
You know, I know it is, but you look at change, and change is a big thing. And, you know, and as I alluded on the very first page of my book, Balance Me, I literally say change is difficult and most people are bad at it. And if you, and we get in our own ways and a lot of this, but change in general is hugely stressful for a lot of people. So a lot of times someone is assigned a team or something that is literally there to help answer questions, help lead the charge, help combine cultures. You have things like new business processes that need to be evaluated, and also kind of dealing with cultural clashes, which we've talked about. You know, like imagine if you take 100 people and then you put them in a room with another 100 people. And then it's really naive to just, people generally don't like other people. That's just kind of life. And now they have to work together and agree on stuff, and then you have employee uncertainty. And as we've mentioned, attrition. I mean, these are all things that, you know, these are all subcategories and departments of change management. So
nobody likes change, and most people just want to do their damn job and go home at the end of the day. And the last thing they want is just more chaos, more change, more problems, more drama, whatever. They just want to do their job and go home. That's it.
True. True. So, I mean, out of those things, like, you know, you have culture clash, you have business processes, uncertainty, and attrition. Like, to me, I think the most pronounced thing is the attrition, because, you know, like, everyone notices when John is not on the team anymore.
Yeah. And it's also the bigger you get that also nobody notices that John is gone, because he works in some other department that I don't know anything about and I have no idea. Right. It's like, oh, I saw in the back of the newsletter that John left. That's like all, you know. Right. But when you're really small, you know, everybody, like 20 people, 30 people, 50 people, whatever. But you do get to a point where it's like, you don't know anymore. But what you do know is the overall sentiment of like, hey, we've noticed that we've had a lot of people who left for whatever reason, but we're not hiring anybody. Right. And that's really becomes the problem. It's everybody eventually gets that sentiment of like, well, a lot of people are leaving, but we're not hiring anybody. And that doesn't feel good.
Yeah. And that's sometimes you mentioned that situation where someone's like, well, do I have two jobs now? I think one of the things when you look at employee attrition as well. So the number one recruiter at Full Scale is our own employees.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they are on the way in from another company. And then I notice that we see an influx in applicants from that same company. Now there's in one case, and I won't mention the company, and this was very early in our timeline. Do you remember when I hired two people and then the other 18 people at the company applied?
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, they have like a terrible culture. So the new folks came over and they started and they're like, hey, this is pretty cool. These folks are all right. And next thing I know, it was a 20 person company and literally had 100% of the employees apply. And we literally had to have a talk. We were like, huh.
Yeah. It seems like there was at some point, something like this happened and you had to make the decision. You're like, you know, we just can't hire anybody else from there for a while.
No, it wasn't that. I hired quite a few people from there. Cause honestly, if you're going to treat your employees like shit, I don't feel like I need to have mercy on your business, but at the same time, like I wasn't trying to just like shut down.
Yeah.
I could have. Honestly, we did end up hiring 8 out of 20 people.
Wow.
There. And it was funny because it was a US company that had an office over there. And as people started leaving, the person that runs that place that was honestly known as being an asshole, tried to rattle some sabers and like basically had sent over some message. This guy could have contacted me and he didn't, but he kind of sent the message over like, we're going to sue you or do something like that. And by the way, I don't respond to that very well. And I did actually send someone back over and with the message, you're lucky I left anyone if you're going to be an asshole like that. But it made sense. Like, you know, and by the way, all those people still work for us.
Well, and what this really goes to show, though, where this really connects is when your competitors know that you've been through an acquisition, all the recruiters in the world wake up to this. They're like, so acquired so and so. Let's go recruit those people. We know that there's a chance they may want to leave now because of whatever is going on, right? Because it's just
same things go with like mass layoffs or departmental shutdowns. Like we went through that, like, cause it sends shockwaves and people get skittish. And, you know, like you said, most people want to just show up to work, go to 9 to 5, make a good living, go home and do other stuff. So the feeling of uncertainty or change or like, and then another thing too, is like, there's a self-preservation. So
right.
I think that's the big driver. I think if you put people in a situation where they feel like they're walking on eggshells every day, it's not a good feeling. So why not go? See, that's the thing at Full Scale. Like we've clearly, you know, in the Philippines, which is where our employees are. I mean, we got big in a hurry. I mean, we're one of the top 3 employers of developers in the second biggest city in the Philippines now. Now that said, word gets out pretty quick. And also good culture word gets out, like meaning like, hey, this is a good place to work.
Right.
So, I mean, really, in the end, that's what it comes down to. Now, at the same time, I've seen people definitely stick through adversity other places and accept lower pay to stay in cultures that they like. So I think really the culture is the big thing.
And tying this back to our episode today about what happens after an acquisition, the big key here is you've got to have a real heightened sense of just keeping the team together for that, especially that first probably 3 to 6 months. But really putting a big focus on keeping people happy, keeping people on board, trying not to disrupt them, you know, as much as possible at the very beginning. And honestly, when Netreo acquired StackFi, I wish we could go back and do it differently of like, hey, they acquired us, but just leave us alone for a while, not like immediately try and smash the two companies together. I just don't think that works real great. The more you can kind of let things kind of slowly assimilate together, probably the better. But you really just got to stay focused on trying to keep your key employees around, keep everybody happy, and expect some turnover. It's going to happen.
Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was brought to us and you by Gusto. If you're looking for an all-in-one HR platform, it's time to check out Gusto. You have everything you need in just a few clicks of a button. You even get 3 free months when you go to gusto.com/startup hustle. Once again, gusto.com/startup hustle. There's a link in the show notes. So Matt, as we come to an end here, what are some of your key points? I think we've hit a lot of this stuff. What really stands out or what's the key message when you think about what happens after an acquisition?
You know, as the founder, I think the hardest part is trying to figure out what is your position afterwards, right? Am I going to stay with the company? Am I not going to stay with the company? More often than not, I would think that founders usually don't stay. I mean, maybe if it's a private equity deal or a, you know, a strategic acquisition where they want to leave the business alone and they want you to run it and you have a lot of autonomy, then you might be okay. But when you're getting acquired and you're getting smashed together in some bigger corporation, as an entrepreneur who's used to making a lot of decisions and you know, having a lot of power and all that kind of stuff, to be brought into the corporate world can a lot of times just be the most stark difference in reality, and just does not work very well. Does not work very well for me. It's very, very frustrating world for me. And you just have to figure out, and you know, how are you going to live in this new world, or if you're not, and if it's not going to work for you, you just got to tell them and be honest with them. A lot of times they don't expect that it's going to work, right? They know this. It's not a mystery to them, especially if they've done acquisitions before. So.
Yeah. And with that, I think it's important that to make decisions, don't be emotional, you know, like, I mean, it's going to be an emotional thing. I mean, either your dreams are coming true and you're like, your life changed and there's, you're like, wow. So we really could get, I really could get $30 million out of this or whatever. But, you know, with that, you know, regardless, you know, making decisions based on emotion is tough. So like, give it some time, I think. I think one of the key points that I heard with this was that, you know, looking back, you're like, I wish we should have gone into this a little slower, not like, yeah, here's day one, now boom, 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 go, 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 go. Cause you know, there's a lot, that's the thing that's very interesting, is I think that a lot of times as business people or analysts or anyone, we look at X's and O's on paper, and that is not people, that is X's and O's on paper. These are columns and rows. And, you know, once you kind of get higher up the funnel, you get human emotion and that, and there's a lot to be said with that. And I think that the uncertainty is something, I think that approach things with empathy and understanding. And, you know, you got to like, remember that, like, what is exciting for you as the founder might not be exciting for the 199 people that work there. So like, and another thing too, is like, be humble, you know, I don't want to see a video of any of you walking down the hallway with the big check. Remember the big check, the one that's like 6 feet wide. That is not how you should get your acquisition check. Get a nice quiet wire into your account. Don't walk around with the big check. Just be happy you got the big check. So, but no, but with that, like I said, is what is your celebration might be someone else's uncertainty. So I think the humble empathetic nature, and you know, whether you're an employee or an entrepreneur or whomever, like also know that, I don't know, you're just redefining things. But I think that these should be happy things and sell it with a positive future. And, you know, like, and that's the way to do it. Well, Matt, I'm ready to end this episode because I want to record number 52, where I've got a big check, like just a big check. It's congratulations, Matt. You've won a big check that says $10,000 on it.
You can get those on Amazon, by the way.
Well, I know I didn't say it was worth $10,000. It says $10,000 on it. So anyway, man, I'm gonna catch up with you on the flip side for number 52. We're gonna round this thing out, man.
All right, let's do it.
I'm out.
Yeah.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button. Then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.